morning, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the Dewar House Society, I welcome you to the session. It's my privilege to introduce Mervyn Harper to you. Now, Mervyn is deeply engrossed in Hawke's Bay's history. He has been a member of the Historic Places Trust Hawke's Bay branch. He has worked in the fields of history and research for a long, long time. Mervyn has a great knowledge up there in his head, and he's really wonderful to listen to. He's going to talk about the trip from Homestead out of Makapiro and the surrounding areas. Mr. Harper's come from the OET area adjacent to that, the Makapiro Church, so that his presentation of slides is not only confined to Makapiro Homestead, but he's also got some interesting bits and bobs for you from around the Makapiro area. With that, what more can I say? I promise to the world, deliver it, Mervyn, won't you?
Thank you, such an introduction as that, I'm feeling if I'm promising the world I might fall off my axis, but never mind. Thank you very much for the introduction. And I have been in Hawke's Bay all of my life, and do visits abroad, etc. And I'm not going to start off specifically on Makapiro. I'm going to tell you a little bit about me, where I came from, and my life, and various moves, etc., which I have. Some of you will have heard before, some of you probably heard from a different angle. But here goes. I was born when my parents were managing Pukehama, which our family acquired off of Maori. I moved from there with my dad and family to Springfield, which is near Tarawa. The top part of which is the top of the Pukehama Hill where the totem pole stand. That was our back paddock from that side. It extended across the Pukehama Road right on to the back of the mission. So it's quite a big block. It was 952 acres in that block, as was Redcliffe, 952 acres. All the Dolville blocks together, they were all put as one, and cut in half for the two Dolville sons. Unfortunately, one of them died quite young. So that was Springfield. Springfield actually now belongs to the Todd Motors family in Wellington. Our family kept up from 1944 until, I think, about 1998, and then they relinquished it. So yes, that's where I lived, that's where I rode to the Pukehama school on my pony in Puma 2 and Puma 3, and then I went to the Taranau school, and then subsequently moved. Now, having left Springfield, going over the Redcliffe Bridge, heading towards Corokebo, I'm going to turn left into Lynx Road, because that leads to part of Makapiro. If you go around Lynx Road corner where the chocolate factory is, there's a big old home there called The Rise. That was where the Harsey family used to live. And it was the rise because it was actually set up on a little rise, which I believe was quite useful at the time of some of the big floods like 1887, etc. Now, if you go along a little further, this Franklin Road, just past that is a big two-storied home. That was part of what was the originally 700 acres which Makapiro had there. They used to use it as a hog grazing block. And before the motorway went through, it extended right through to Aller Road, where the corner of the new O'Rings Nursery is. Some of you may have seen that. So that's where it was there. Over the years, it's been reduced. After the Second World War, there was a piece taken off it for rehab soldiers for orchards. Some was sold to various other... I know Haynes Butchery had a piece there. But if you look across on Lynx Road now, that great big huge storehouse, warehouse, to whatever you call it, heading towards the motorway on the left, that was part of the Makapiro block. And of course it was built right down. The last of that block was sold about 1958-59, at the same time as the property which I now live on, because it adjoined our families at Waiteo. So those two blocks went from Makapiro there. They also had another small block down Rousley Road as well, which Ron Shrimpton used to live on. Now, carrying on ever so briefly and quickly onto the motorway, going left towards the Chesterhope Bridge, Chesterhope, no, it's not Chesterhope, whatever that bridge is, you look down to the left there, back towards Redcliffe Way, all that land was part of the Tarihar land, and Ballygilly, bit of hill note, at the time, they were canvassing for money for the construction of the current marae. And she sold all that land in there that she owned to Frank Gordon, who's now at Parongahau. station. And the money from that she put into the construction of the current Onaihu Marae with its little tekateka on the top, who is called Hulukai, the dancing warrior. Now, I just put that as an aside. Going back down now onto the road towards Korokipo, there's a little house on the right, which will be my grandparents' little two-storied house, which Mr. Reed used to live in. It was moved up from 1897 up onto the side of the hill. The little two-storied place was the home of Alfred Hollies. It was a dairy. Going to Fern Hill, have any of you been through Fern Hill in the last few days? There's been massive activities there. They've had working bees, they put a new entrance in and lined it with shrubs and rocks and things. They put a complete new sort of mantle into the entrance of the precinct of the Marae itself. And it's nicely carved, and unfortunately I don't get the stuff that looks like dried seaweed, but I don't know what it is. I don't think it enhances it, and they put little bits of powder along the top, which you can see as you drive past. But it has had a massive facelift. So you turn right, you go up towards, heading up towards Mount Piero. We go past old patriarchs, and both of which I've got here, and I'm hoping I can put them out for you to have a quick peek at, some of which you'll see on the slides here. And then you go, recently they lifted the old church at Fern Hill, about 12 feet of repiled. I've got some photos of that, so I'm saying, but I haven't got them with me, unfortunately. You come to Old Patriarch and you turn left, because that's heading up towards Mount Piero, and that used to be the main road to Mount Piero, apart from the river. And in 1913, they changed the road. It used to run right round the point of Guns Hill, where we call Guns Hill, where the wine house is. There. It used to go down there to the river. Eventually, they eroded the road away. And in 1930, they put the cutting up over the top and down to where the current Ohiki station buildings are. And that went right up the river. That access was negotiated with Cartwright Brown and Noah Hookie. He was the big chief, and most of that's in this handy book here. And the idea was he would give them a right of way and create a road, provided they would assure him of his people having work on their crops further up. Cartwright Brown was at that point the owner of Mount Piero. He subsequently went bust, and his property was taken over by the bank and resold. So that's where that negotiation went. When Wayne Shrimpton became a member for the riding, and he was a member of that riding for, I think, something like 20 years, quite a long time, he closed that road, as mentioned, Mount Piero, and he negotiated the opening of the current road from junction of two roads down, which comes up down by the school. Now, our family came along at that particular point in time, because they had walked the block off Mount Piero. We wanted access to the back box to give titles to the various branches of the family. And you couldn't get titles unless you had access to a public road. So Harkness found the survey pits, reopened the Ohiti Road, and bought a right-of-way, which is now called Tauhara Road, which is the name of the car place. And therefore, it enabled the other Harkness to get title to the back box of Waihiro and Kokemana. So that was fortuitous. Initially, Mount Piero went very happy about that, said it wasn't a great use, which turned out to be a lot of nonsense, because it then made a right-of-way like a lane where they could bring all their stock from the Lowry right down by Commons by the road and bring it up the road with fences either side, ultimately. Mount Piero was originally called a swampy headland, I think was the translation of it, and it had quite a mixed range of owners in the early stages. In 1872, it was quoted as being 22,000 acres. Earlier in the piece, Noah Hookie was leasing directly to Tuke. Now, that was then regarded as illegal. And if you happen to have read Aidan Coleman's book, there was a legal aspect which came to that. And the Maori were much happy to lease to somebody, a partner who had some money, and get the cold hard catch. Where in actual fact, when McLean came along, they had the partitioning system. And if they could get control of it, then they would lease it back at a higher rate or sell it to some of the other aspiring farmers. So yeah, there was quite a bit of toing and froing, quite a bit of legal aspect involved in that particular period of time. You had Edward Tuke, he was mentioned at that point of time. You had Rhodes, who used to own Clive Grange, which subsequently became part of Mount Piero eventually, and this is being for Barbara, formerly Barbara Shrimpton. She was born at Clive Grange. The old Clive Grange home now, I think, has been pulled down. The other person that was involved, of course, was Cartwright Brown, who came from Sussex in England and with a cartload of money. And of course, as I mentioned before, he eventually took over Anson and Mount Piero at the same time, and he went bankrupt. and 1865 the ownership of Madbury was surrendered to the BNZ. It was then sold to Joseph Rhodes, who was a wealthy man from Otago, and he came up here and he bought Clyde Grange, he bought an area right through from virtually the Cape, and it was perceived then that he had too much, and the governor stepped in and they reduced the amount of goods. So he then came up and he bought Mapiro, and then he sold it, and then there was a group set up called Calcutt, Harris and Rich. Now most of this stuff has come from what Mary McGregor's had, some of which I've refined a wee bit. Rich was from Bushy Park, Palmerston South, Otago. Now that's where the Shrimptons first came to New Zealand, one of the Grange Littles and Times. Soon after that, Shrimpton came to Hawke's Bay as a land valley, and I suspect that that was where he got in tow with the powers that be in the land of the world, with amongst the gentry, etc., and got into Mapiro. Now, eventually we hear that Rich and Shrimpton had bought out the other two partners, Calcutt and Harrison. I don't know very much about them at all. So then it became Shrimpton and Rich. And to enhance the deal, he married Rich's daughter, Mary. And that does help. After a little while, he bought Rich out. He married Mary Rich, and they were people from South Island, and came up to Hawke's Bay and started Mapiro going. Now, Mary, his first wife, became very unwell, and she died in 1898, and then in 1900 he married Edith Maud Forster, who was a registered nurse, and I think she's in the first 20 of the registrations of nurses in New Zealand. I have actually seen the certificate, which is around amongst the family somewhere. I imagine it's under a large pile or somewhere. She came here to nurse the first Mrs. Shrimpton, and she subsequently died, and then in 1900 he married Edith Maud Forster from New Plymouth, and she became the second Mrs. Shrimpton. And Mapiro grew and was farmed. Watty introduced, they used to call it all, the family called him Watty. Anyhow, they called him Watty Shrimpton. He introduced hares for coursing, he introduced red deer, which became a pest. They were reported and brought up from the South Island. I'm thinking in my head, how on earth did you transfer deer from the South Island in the 1800s? But they obviously did. And at that stage, they lived in the first house, was built about 1878. Now that first little house in West Leander is incorrectly named. It was said to be part of the older Markby homestead, but it's not. This is a bit premature, this memo. The first little house was down by the river at an area, if any of you have been there in recent times, where they have the new jet boat track. Some of you might have been there. Now, this little picture here is the remnants of the first Mapiro home, not the O'Markby home. It was put on land that subsequently became O'Markby, because Shrimpton sold 4,000 acres to Connors. They called it O'Markby, and that eventually was split in half for the two sons, Morris Connor and John Connor. John Connor's block has now gone to his daughter. You go up the Ohiti Road, when you get to the foot of the hill, that's the bottom end of O'Markby, and you come around the other way and you go on the top end past Mapiro, that's Connor's. That happened about 1906 or 1909. Now, about the same time, no, a little sooner than that, they decided to move the old homestead, that little worry that I've shown you, up to where it is still to this day. They quoted it as being part of the manager's house. It may have been, but as I first remembered it in the late 50s and early 60s, there was an old bachelor fellow lived in called Bill Fisk, and he lived in that there. But that is part of the original. It was sited in what was called Bullock Bay, and Tony Connor found a key for it on the site where it used to be, and I think it's probably the key to the door of the cement. I can kind of visualize what size of key it might have been. Some of those keys were pretty big. And also the remnants of a well nearby. And of course, in those early days, that was the first mode of transport up the river. And so they came into this area which was called Bullock Bay. Now, as an adjunct to that, in 1884, Kurapaponga Bridge, which was by Gentle Annie, was washed out with a big flood, and a lot of the piles were eroded away and they floated down the river, and they I suspect, accumulated in this bay near to where the house was, and the Shrimptons got their horse teams and pulled these piles out. And they became the basis of the first Matapiro stockyards. Now, if you go past Matapiro, you go down a dip like that. Just before you go down that dip over the Kikawhera Creek, there is an area there which the current owners have grown lucerne on. For some reason, the area where the stockyards were didn't grow very well, and they've only just realised that that might have been a problem of its compaction or whatever it had in those early days. So yes, that's where the first Matapiro stockyards were. Toby Simmons once told me that he reckoned that some of the timber they used in the homestead might have come from upstream in various parts, but how correct it is, I don't know. I suspect he may have been confused with having learned that, but that doesn't matter, as an aside. Between Bullock Bay, down by the river, and current Matapiro, you go over the Kikawhera Stream. Now, the Kikawhera Stream is of great interest to rock hunters and archaeologists and the likes, and they found many, many bits and pieces of stone and rocks and marl bones and all sorts of things around Matapiro that are of great interest to these fossickers. But there is another little story about fossicking there. Watty Shrimpton, in his early days, used to ride a horse, bearing in mind he died in 1936, a fair while ago. He was riding up that creek somewhere and looked down and saw something very shiny, and he got off and picked it up. In actual fact, it was a black pearl. Now, the black pearl was found, and it is now in the London Museum, and the late Matthew Ford, who was one of the contributors to the book here, he had been to see it. It would have to be about 1951-52, because Matthew's father died suddenly in 1953, I think it was, and he had seen that and came home. So yes, it is an interesting creek, particularly if you're interested in things very, very old. It was decided, after having moved the cottage up to the present site of the homestead, that they would build a new home. And the site was chosen as the home of Te Whakaero's meeting house. Now, the meeting house, I believe, was on the right, if you look at the homestead from there, on the right-hand end, on that end down there. It's a lower piece, but that's where Te Whakaero's very ornately carved meeting house stood. What became of it, I don't know. I haven't found anybody else that knows either. He was a tohunga, and I don't quite know what the translation would be. He was a soothsayer or a medicine man or a man of predictions, I'm not sure. But that's where he was, and this meeting house was heavily carved. So it was decided that the first story home, which was that one, would be built there about 1900. And then subsequently the family started to come along. You had Ron, Wallace, Barbara, and Edith. Edith was known as Babs, and she married a chap Fibbs in England, and sadly Edith, or Babs, was killed in a motor accident near Edinburgh. She only had one daughter, Frances, who died about 7 or 8 years ago in Bristol in England, having never married with no family. And she was the only daughter there, so she ended up with 860-odd acres in Matapiro. The other daughter, Barbara, Barbara Nero, had another 860 acres. The two girls got much the same, and she married Larry Ford, Matthew's parents. Barbara had three children, John, Matthew, and we called Little Bar. She's a little Barbara. She became Barbara Franklin. Jean was the only one of that original family who was really still living nearby, and she leases the block of hers back to the current owners. And Jean was my immediate wonderful neighbour. Has been for over 50 years. And then 1906, as the family grew, they decided they needed more room, and they built the second story. Now, the second story made the building into a place of 36 rooms, which is quite a large block. The first one was designed by Tilliard Matouche. Now, there were three generations of architects in Matouche. There was Tilliard, the old man, there was Rene, the father, and then this guy, currently still alive, in Napier. Now, in Hawke's Bay, there are, I think, about 6 or 7 Matouche homes. Matouche, Tilliard himself, became synonymous with Tudor style. If you saw Tudor style, that was synonymous with the name Matouche. And Matapiro is very much that style. You've got Silverford at Pukitat, which is another one. You've got Erewhon up on the Taihape Road is another. You've got one in Napier, and I'm not sure where it is, and I haven't seen it. There is still one near Takapau, not a particularly big one, but it was a Matouche design. But the real cluster of Matouche homes seems to be in the Rangitiki Manawatu area. one or two of which I have seen. So they left quite a legacy unique in architectural design. Although, having said that, Latouche also designed Tinanui, which is a totally different looking place. Totally different. But there is a coldness about Tinanui. It looks like it's all plastered and it's a bit sort of set down in the valley. But that was a Latouche design too. It was quite different from what he normally was known for. Of course, you had the saga of little Walter, who died age 6, I think, diphtheria. And Watty also was very involved with the hospital board, and it was, I think, probably as a result of the little boy age 6 died, that he made the money available for the construction of Shrimpton Ward. It's interesting how the wards of Napier were named after various people. You had Coleman Ward, which was named after Coleman. You had another lady, she was a nurse there, Hetty something, I can't think of it.
Mitchley?
Oh, Mitchley Ward was another one, yes, that's right. Yes, there were a number of them. There were two Rob Johns, I don't know quite how they got their names, but there was an upper and a lower. One of them was an ophthalmic ward, I think. Yeah, so that's that. There's another question that's come through my head at the same time, looking across the river towards back end of Manapiro. We're looking past Roy's Hill, and I'd love to know who Roy was. Does anybody know after whom Roy's Hill was run? What was he noted for? Why did he get such a substantial block of land named after him? What did he do to deserve it? Does anybody know? Well, there's a little project for you. So we did quite a bit of Manapiro in the area. There was a piece set aside in the will for the construction of the Manapiro Hall. I get very angry with the electoral roll people because the last two elections they've sent my little enrolment form to say I live at Crownthorpe, and I don't live at Crownthorpe. And when I notified them about it, they eventually wrote back and said, oh, well, I'm sorry, they'll put it right next time. This time the electoral roll came out, I'm still at Crownthorpe. So I rang them. They wrote back and they said, oh, well, I'm very sorry, our computer won't recognise Manapiro. And I'm going to tell them before very long that Manapiro was there long before Crownthorpe. In fact, part of the Crownthorpe settlement came from Manapiro, as did Wakamarama, as did various other places. Crownthorpe settlement road was put in 1922, and the settlement, I think, took place in 1923. However, Crownthorpe further up the road was a bit earlier than that, and of course the Crownthorpe Church was built as a memorial of Coleman's son, who was killed during the war. So, yes, there's a lot of history that comes through Manapiro. The current owners are Ken Simonton. He's a really nice guy. He lives in Auckland in Campbell Bay. There's a beautiful home there. And he's got his son Grant and Ali. They live in the current home. So they're a young couple, really delightful, down-to-earth people, but very successful. They've got one daughter at Woodford out here and the work in this farm. And it's great to see the homestead now functioning as a home, with kids running around in bikes and swimming pool plastic things and lights on. For years it was shut up and sort of shrouded like a mausoleum, but now it's alive and kicking. Fortunately, the people that have got it now, and I think it's a family trust of some sort, but there's plenty of money and they've done great things with it. They put a huge irrigation scheme in. Shrimpton's had put a well in before the actual sale. You may remember there was an auction sale at Napier War Memorial Hall, I think it was, some years ago, and every man and his dog and son came to see what was going to become of Manapiro, and it was passed in. It was never sold, they went often enough. The chief negotiator on behalf of the Shriptons was Sue Peck, who lives in San Francisco, and she was the sole trustee. She was Wallace's only daughter. Wallace has since died. So Sue was in charge of most things, and she was at one stage president of the World Body of Psychologists. When the agents out here decided they would talk into letting some of these deals go through, they struck a very formidable opponent. And she hung on, and eventually it was sold to Ken and his family, and I actually think it was a great move, because the place is going ahead now. Subsequently, what was Mrs. Ford's block, portion of her 860 acres was bought by the Todds and the Shan family. Now, Sarah Shan used to be the home science teacher at Woodford for a number of years. She's now teaching at Lambert Girls High. And her elderly parents live there too. On this piece, they've got a vineyard there. We've got lots of vineyards up there. We've got Morton Estate, we've got Monowai, we've got Corbin's. Delegates, at one stage, Delegates Vineyard was the largest developing vineyard in New Zealand. I think it's been superseded now by some in Marlborough, Nelson area. We've now got a winery in Monowai, just almost opposite the Crownsville Church. So yes, it's a developing property. The Simons are nice people. They're very sort of community spirited. The kids all went to the local school initially, and it's just nice to have them as neighbours. Yes, I did forget to tell you that we came past Tokihamama School, which of course was built on land belonging to Araya Kararia, the same family from which Balahili's descended. Kararia and Terry Harbour, they were all tied up. Yes, I've just about covered most of it, I think, that is of interest to you. I'll probably think of three things as I go out the door, but never mind. I think that's a good time for me to close. That's Barbara Ford there. That's Babs. Then, of course, is that Piero before the top story went on. That's the inside of the main stairway going upstairs. Little bits of architecture in there. Now, this, I've got a couple of photos. This is a new dam which delegates built to store water in the wintertime, so that when you have big droughts, they've got a supply of water. It's a big reservoir. And I just took those photos there, and it was built in the last 10 years. And do you see those poplars there? That's where the Kikawhero stream goes through, where Whitey found his back pearl. This is Old Patriarch, which I was a bit involved with, as was Lil and John Johnson. There's John on the end, Lil, Mervyn, I can't know who the next lady is, the lady who owned the land, Pat Parsons, the late John Russell and David Hildreth. And this home was originally the manager's home for Nelson's place, Wakamarama. It's now been sold to the Hawke's Bay Dairies, but it was an old home there. It was originally Dara's home. And that's the children with their nurse, homestead there. And that's the back entrance. There's old Watty and his wife next door. Watty was very involved with the army at one stage. He wasn't a military man per se, but he became involved in enlisting people when the Hauhau rebellions were going on, and not long after, I think, the Battle of Onaranui, which of course is straight over the river from Springfield, where I used to live, and you look down on the monument. So this cannon was washed up somewhere along the way on the beach. Watty saw it and said, "I want that." And however they got it back from Akatia, they brought it back and set it up. It's been there for a long time. The only thing that's problem, somebody purchased the cannonball. I think maybe young Anthony might have got it for a shot. That's the only thing that's missing, but it's sat there for a long time. There's the two girls and the little fella. And this is the little chapel of the flowers that was built in memory of young Walter. There it is there. Millet was the builder, but he was also the gardener. It's a very interesting garden. They had a fellow called Hyde, who was a gardener come nurseryman in the very early days, and he propagated a lot of the trees at the park on that area. He was quite a nursery man. That's the little fountain that sits outside. That's the Crownsville Church. That's been redone over now and all repainted and new roofing done and a new spire. So that's all been re-slated. It looks very good. And that's the Shrimpton block. There's Barbara, John Ford. They're all in one big block there at Crownsville Cemetery. And that's the view from the top veranda. And our family had this piece over here, and when we sold it eventually, and these joker went and put pine trees in it, which I was really round off about, because it certainly wasn't pine tree country. Not in my opinion, anyhow. Yes, that's quite interesting. Oh, that was an old marmalade jar. They had their own schoolroom there too, in the governess. Tony Connor's father did his early education there. It's been left, or was left, exactly as it was when they were teaching kids there. And there was a little old piano there which had a sort of a fretwork front on it. But you'll notice a lot of the furniture was made for them, and it's mostly all oak. And they have this sort of symbol thing on a number of the pieces of furniture, whether it was the symbol of the designer or what, I'm not quite sure. These are just some of the artifacts that were there. Now, Edith Maud Shrimpton, you see embossed on the linen there. That same sign come through there. That's part of the clock that was actually built into that building. Some of the paintings which they had there. Most of the paintings went to it because Sue Peck inherited most of those. This was the men's shaving stand, I suppose you'd call it. I thought that was quite an interesting piece. I guess that's what it was. Now, this was a W.G. Baker painting. Gene Ford has this little old radio now. That's Edith Maud. This fella, I don't know who he is, but I'd like to find out because it's a very good action shot. It's taken a long time because there's no hard hat being worn. He's jumping wire. I think it might be the Hawke's Bay Show, but I would like to know a little bit about him because it's a very good action shot. It's not quite sharp, but never mind. That's the early manager's home. And the little initial worry that came up from them that was sited just along here still. But that has been substantially changed since then. That's the wall shed before they put another portion onto it on this side. That's as it is now, soon after they painted it. And that was when they were stripping it down. It's a big shed, built in the 1880s.
This is in the school then?
Yes, the little baby's plate in the school then. That was dug in a post hole, that pistol I found when they were digging. Somebody made a little box for it, I don't know where it is now. That's on the beginning of the stairs. I don't know what you call those little lights when you go up the stairway. That's in the garden. Gather your rosebuds by your mane. I don't know the rest of it. It's in here somewhere.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Do you know who any of the people are standing in that military photograph?
No, I don't. Apart from Watty and his wife. Somebody that's done research into the military may know, but I don't know. Walter or Watty. He's only a little bit.
What year is he born?
1846, I think.
I've got an A and P medal that was awarded to him in 1976, so that would be about right.
Treasure it, because yes. Such a lot of stuff gets lost in the years of time.
And about 4 or 5 years ago, it must have been when the place was sold, a lot of stuff came to make imposters from there. I managed to get a school hat and vest with W. Shrimpton's name. I ended up donating it to Hero Earth. That'd be the younger one, would it? Would it be the Wallace? Is he the one who died? Or
no, Wallace was the last of the whole family to die. Some of you may remember at the Waitangi celebrations, they had a group of people in period costume, and I was the fellow wearing Watty's top hat. Somebody wrote a letter to the paper, because at that stage I had these tinted lenses, and somebody wrote a little facetious letter to the paper, no doubt that those spectacles would have been available at that period of time, which I did not respond. Well, it seems like that we've just about come to the end. Thank you for being such a good audience.
And on behalf of the Society, I'd like to say what a fascinating talk we've just had. I'm sure we've all heard the most wonderful things and can't wait to go and look up them. A couple of things I was going to say, yes. Though, Mark and Mariah, you mentioned that they had a DIY last weekend.
That's right.
They'll be on Māori TV this weekend, DIY Mariah. I'll explain. You said there was something about seaweed.
Yes, I wondered what that was. I don't know whether it enhances it or not.
Well, in Māori legend, when Hinenui Te Kōra runs away from her husband and goes into the underground, she has another man waiting for her, and he dresses up a cave for her, and he decorates it with seaweed. You see, with greenery used at funerals.
It was seaweed.
Yes. So that's the reference that you see in the greenery. The other thing I was going to say is that the Carved Meeting House, I presume, is part of Cairo, and it got burnt.
I never knew what became, I have never seen a picture of it either.
There are some, it was photographed by, what's that photographer in the anyway, he went
Russell
out.
Hall.
Oh, no. Yes.
Anyway, they went out and photographed it and they brought some of the carvings out. So they were kept. It was burnt deliberately because they said it had fleas or it was spreading. It was unsanitary anyway. So that was the end of it. Anyway, we'll all go home with the task of finding out who Roy is. Thank you very much on behalf of the Do Our House Society for an interesting talk.
It's been great.
Thank you.